On this week's Video Culture, we'll talk National Treasure and National Treasure 2, Book of Secrets.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills. There will be thrills. And there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And welcome to another episode of Video Culture. I am your host, Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Essery.
And today, episode number 40. 40. Can you believe we've done 40 of these, Matt?
I really can. It's really flying by.
I mean, yeah. It's been more than a year since it's almost been 2 years.
That's crazy to think about, man. It's a lot of movies watched.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, when you consider two movies at a time, that's 80. It's almost 80 movies.
Yeah, that's almost a lot for a discussion that started out with very meager beginnings like this.
Well, I'm learning a whole lot, and I really like it. And this week, because it's another milestone, 10 episode, we're doing, the movie and the sequel. Yeah. So we're doing National Treasure and National Treasure Book of Secrets. Now, when the movie came out, I'll go ahead and mention National Treasure Book of Secrets. When it came out in 2007 in the theaters, it was actually named just National Treasure : Book of Secrets. But when it came out on DVD in like 2008, they actually named it National Treasure 2 : Book of Secrets.
Because people are easily confused when they have options, you know?
Yeah, because you have just National Treasure. Like, they never renamed it at all. Yeah. They didn't know it was going to be like a real big hit series kind of thing.
Yeah. And I got to say, I do love these episodes where we talk about a movie and its sequel. I like talking about the progression of franchises like that. But really, yeah. Man, I'm super excited that we're finally talking about Nicolas Cage.
Now, you're a big fan of Nicolas Cage.
I'm a massive, unironic fan of Nicolas Cage, yeah.
So you have, like, the Nick Cage, like, candle or whatever that you like. but I do remember that there was a post, either Facebook or Twitter, where you said, I would have a whole podcast dedicated to Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, I've actually debated destroying whatever street cred I have in the film critic community by starting a podcast that's all about my unironic love for Nicolas Cage's acting ability.
So, what is it about Nick Cage that you love so much?
Well, it's let me explain. It's going to take me a moment to really delve into it. But okay. He's a very versatile actor. I mean, he's done so many different kinds of films. He's done dramas, comedies, horror films, action pictures. No other movie star has ever had the diverse career of Nicolas Cage. And one thing that people often say is they often want to make fun of like his big moments, his overacting mega moments. Those are the ones they make the YouTube clips out of and the GIFs and the memes.
And because he has this like real sort of calming demeanor, and then flips out.
Yes, exactly. Then, it's almost like he's like a living embodiment of like a Pixies song.
It's right.
It's like quiet, quiet, loud, quiet, quiet, loud.
It really reminds me a lot of like what Gene Wilder really.
In a lot of ways, yes. And see, people have really picked up on that because it's an easy thing to notice about an actor. And that's become like a, this, there's been this whole cult of ironic love around Nicolas Cage.
Mm-hmm.
But I contend that he is a great he's just a great actor in general. I mean, because we've seen him play small parts or low-key parts and do it incredibly well. I mean, Birdie and Bringing Out the Dead, Leaving Las Vegas. You know, those kind of movies where he's not being crazy all the time, but he really nails the dramatic moments.
Mm-hmm.
And he can do that, and he can be wild and wacky.
And yeah, in one of his early movies, the Coen Brothers film that he was in, Raising Arizona, I mean, High was a very, like, kind of subdued character.
Yes. Yeah, he was. I mean, he had some physical comedy things, but he really, in the movie, he's kind of one of the more low-key characters in that film. Like, he's got a lot of range. And people always want to point out to, like he said, to his big moments, his freak-out moments, and they want to point that out as bad acting. Well, I've got a theory about
overacting, I think.
Yes, overacting silly. And I've got a theory about that I want to lay on you here to begin the podcast.
All right.
What he is doing is akin to Pablo Picasso's Cubism.
Okay.
So basically, the idea is, when Pablo Picasso was a young artist, like when he was a kid, a preteen, a young man, he was a very great fine artist. You can go Google his work when he was young, and there are these ornate, beautifully drawn and rendered realistic paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And as he got older, he got more and more bored with that idea, and he started talking about the idea of unlearning the academic process. That's the phrase he used. Unlearning the academic process, and he started distorting forms. Again, he'd put two eyes on one side, he'd make it flat and blocky, to where it wouldn't really look like a person anymore, but it would still be interesting and intriguing. And I think that Nicolas Cage, who I think he is a master thespian, because you can look at his basic dramatic work like Leaving Las Vegas and say that's fine acting. He knows how to do that, so now he's become fascinated with the idea of deconstructing acting as an art form and exploring what you can do within the space.
Oh.
You know, we often think of artists as being people with, like, paintbrushes and pens and paper, or we don't really think about artists as actors.
Right.
But I think he's really just experimenting with his art.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say one thing about Nicolas Cage is that, like you mentioned previously, I mean, I don't know anything about all this Cubist and stuff and looking in deeply, and I appreciate you bringing it up. I mean, it'd be interesting. You would have to go into a deeper study, like a deeper podcast, to sort of explore that. I don't really know. But I do know he does take a variety of roles, and he's one of the only guys that I know that could be, you know, the bad guy in Con Air.
Well, he's the good guy in Con Air.
Or the good guy. Yeah, the good guy in, yeah, the that's right. John Malkovich is the bad guy. Yeah. But be the good kind of redneck guy in Con Air, and also be like the loving sort of aloof character that he was in what was the one he was in with Sarah Jessica Parker, were there? In Las Vegas.
Is that Honeymoon in Vegas?
Honeymoon in Vegas.
That's a good one. That's a really good one.
So, I mean, I know he's a Coppola. He grew up, in the, like, seeing the movies, growing up, seeing Hollywood, knowing that that's what he wanted to do and wanted to play other characters. And I know that he's always, just like every other actor, I think, drawn to what it is to kind of be in this, you know, the human condition kind of thing. And I think that National Treasure he plays like sort of a really interesting, character as Benjamin Gates. But let's just go ahead and talk about the movies real quick.
What's the plot, Ryan?
Yeah. So they were both directed and produced by the same by the same group. They are Disney films, and I think this is our first Disney film, or Disney films even, that we're discussing. Now, we discussed,
I think you're right,
Disney when we discussed Roger Rabbit, but we haven't done any Disney films at all. I mean, you think of Disney and you think of kids' movies. You don't think of movies like this.
Yeah.
But this is a time, like, Pirates of the Caribbean was made in 2003?
Mm-hmm.
And that was Disney, and then National Treasure, 2004.
Yeah. So what was going on there was Disney was trying really hard to have cool franchises. They really wanted to go after that like, young adult male demographic who didn't think Disney was cool, quote-unquote. And they tried that for quite a while during that time period, and eventually they just, we'll just go buy Marvel, and we'll go buy Star Wars, and stop trying to make our own, like, cool franchises. We'll just go buy cool franchises.
Well, that was done later. I mean, this was before all of that.
Yeah, so I'm saying this is when they were trying to have their own. They were trying to jumpstart their own, like, hip adventure franchises.
Right, exactly. So, it was produced by Jerry Bruckheimer,
mm-hmm.
Who we talked about Jerry Bruckheimer on the show before. He's a Video Culture alum, producing Beverly Hills Cop, Top Gun, Days of Thunder, The Ref, Bad Boys, Crimson Tide, The Rock, Con Air, Armageddon, Enemy of the State, Gone in 60 Seconds, Pirates of the Caribbean, Remember the Titans, and then he's also done TV shows like the Bad Boys for Life TV show, Top Gun Maverick, CSI. Those are the two.
Yeah, those are the two newer sequels.
CSI, Training Day. He's also done like other film, not just like big blockbusters, but he's also done like American Gigolo. I mean,
yeah,
you've seen a Jerry Bruckheimer film before.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's probably the most powerful producer in Hollywood, really.
Yeah, like more so than Steven Spielberg.
Yeah,
I would say. And if it was just like, because everybody wants to do his movie, he's the big, if you want a big action movie, it's Jerry Bruckheimer,
Yeah.
And it was also directed by John. Now, you have to help me with the name here.
I think it's Turtletop.
Turtletop? That's what it looks like. And he also directed Three Ninjas and another great movie, Cool Runnings.
He did Cool Runnings, yeah. That we seem to bring up a lot on this show.
We do. And I think that's going to have to work its way in, obviously, with John Candy. But he also did other movies like While You Were Sleeping, Phenomenon. And he also did another movie, which is very sort of, similar to National Treasure, which is The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is another Disney Jerry Bruckheimer film.
Apparently, him and Nicolas Cage really liked working with each other.
Yeah, obviously so. And who knows? I mean, even if I did the notes of Phenomenon, his John Travolta's character might have even been written for, like, they might have had, Nicolas Cage in mind when they were trying to pitch that show or pitch that.
It probably would have been a better movie. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so the storyline of this kind of goes all over the place, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, but it's basically like there's a treasure hunt, and the treasure hunt takes you through American history. Mm-hmm. And where Gates, like the family has been passed down, and there's, the Freemasons have this treasure, and they've hidden the treasure because they didn't want it to get, England or, to have it. And so they hid it away, but it's up to them to kind of find it because they have all these, cryptic clues. And some of the clues, like one of the clues is like it's like hidden ink on the back of the Declaration of Independence.
Which is really what the trailer focused on a lot at the time, was like, oh, we have to steal the Declaration of Independence, So, mm-hmm. So that's kind of what a lot of the marketing for the first film focused on, was this idea of a heist around stealing this piece of American history. And it's such kind of a funny idea.
Mm-hmm.
But, and so basically it's a treasure hunt, and Nicolas Cage is sort of this Indiana Jones type character named Ben Gates.
Yeah.
He's looking for hidden treasure that was hidden by our forefathers.
And I mean, go ahead.
And they basically hid it throughout American historical artifacts.
Well, I mean, and really, if you think about it, National Treasure, I mean, the whole sort of franchise is almost like this Indiana Jones for America, or an adult version of the Goonies.
I would say adult version of the Goonies is probably, after rewatching them, I think adult version of the Goonies is probably a little more accurate than Indiana Jones.
Probably more on the second one, but, you know, we'll get there.
Yes.
So, and I mean, and really, if you think about it, like, you know, the another part of these movies is like these, I think that draws people is like this like found sort of things within our culture. Like the Da Vinci Code, the book was released in 2003, which eventually made its way into a movie a few years later.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like people like sort of at that time fell in love with the idea of like, oh, there's still undiscovered, you know, things that we haven't found that have been kind of hiding in plain sight this whole time.
Yeah. Well, what one of my film critic friends jokingly referred to it as baby's first conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Which always made me laugh.
Yeah, that is funny.
Yeah.
But I mean the budget was $100 million, you know, in 2004. I mean, and that's pretty substantial. I mean, Disney's putting up some bucks here.
It's a big film. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, this is no like $30 million, $20 million dollar like comedy. This is $100 million, 30,000. I don't know if you can make a 20-minute short for $30,000.
It'd be Nicolas Cage eating a sandwich for 20 minutes. Yeah.
With no sound, just a camera and the director. $100 million. Yeah, so they were putting up some dollars here.
Yeah,
And that's probably rounded off. I mean, we don't even know how close they went over or under. We just know that's the number that they say. So Nicolas Cage plays Benjamin Gates, his friend and sort of like sort of assistant. I don't know if he's an assistant or more just like a friend or cohort.
He's sort of like his tech guy, his like IT guy, his guy in the chair, if you will.
Right.
You know?
And he's played by Sean Bean.
Sean Bean's the villain. You're thinking of...
Oh, Sean Bean. Ian Howe.
No, the guy...
Oh! Sorry.
Yeah. 1 second here. I'll
Riley Poole.
There we go.
Is the character's name Justin Bartha. See, they hardly ever say his name in the movie. He's just kind of there in every scene.
Yeah, they mention his name a lot more in the second one. But yeah, Justin Bartha, who was in the Hangover movies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever saw those, but he was part of those.
Yeah, he was the... Wasn't he the guy that they were like lost or whatever?
No, he was one of the family members who kept... You kept asking where they were.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's the sarcastic like computer expert. Now, no, Ian Howe, his character was played by Sean Bean. He was the bad guy. Yeah, he's like this villain. He plays the villain who is also trying to get to the treasure.
Yeah, basically, you know? He's just a rich guy who wants to be richer. That's literally his entire motivation.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, it's Sean Bean. So Sean Bean elevates that just by himself and having his presence in the role,
right? Yeah. And then we get introduced to Dr. Abigail Chase, and she's like an archivist for the National Archives. It just becomes the three of them. So it's like this; they're almost like three buddies, and that's why I think that it's a lot like the Goonies, is because it's just like the three of them, and then like Benjamin Gates' dad.
Played by John Voight.
Yeah, played by John Voight, kind of gets roped into it as well. And I must say, John Voight, he also like pulled off his dad in such an amazing way, because you know he's kind of aloof kind of guy.
Yeah,
he's kind of like not, you don't really have it right together, and it's just like, this is the same guy that was in Mission Impossible.
Yes. I mean, it's really a great performance from John Voight. I mean, he really feels like he could be Cage's father. You know, like they do a really good job of kind of sharing mannerisms.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal. And I just want to go back for a second. And you did mention the actress's name. The actress is Diane Kruger.
Yeah, Diane Kruger. I did not mention her name, so yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, she was in Inglourious Basterds, directed by Quentin Tarantino. You know, I always like to mention Tarantino as much as possible. but yeah, she played a big part in that film. She's wonderful mm-hmm. in National Treasure 1 and 2.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the love interest. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and all of the characters we just mentioned are all in the second one as well, which is another thing that makes it like really great. Harvey Keitel also comes back for the second one. He plays Special Agent Peter Sadusky, FBI special agent ahead of the case. And then also Christopher Plummer is like in the intro yes. as like the granddad.
Mm-hmm, yeah, giving that bit of gravitas to the movie at the very beginning.
Yeah, it's like the Gates granddad. So yeah, it's really kind of a fun adventure movie. I think that, you know, it always keeps you on the edge of your seat about whatever thing. And, you know, one clue kind of leads into the next, leads into the next, leads yeah. into the next. But then you finally get down to like the thing. And it's just like, it's just like the spiraling old rickety staircase.
It suddenly really becomes like, it feels like more like Indiana Jones or the Goonies at that point, especially when they're yeah. going down like these old like architecture things. But
these booby traps and stuff yeah. like that. Yeah, it's yeah. just.
But one thing I think is pretty brilliant about National Treasure, because it's all based around puzzles and clues, and all the puzzles and clues are a little bit ludicrous. But they're just plausible enough where you can kind of piece them together with the characters. So they kind of, even though they're all kind of, the clues are all kind of silly and far-fetched, it seems just plausible enough where you're really engaged with it the entire time.
And yeah, they use a lot of real history. They use a lot of real American history to tie in these sort of far-fetched ideas. Of like, wait, is this possible? You know, did this really happen? I mean, because, well, yeah, we do know that, you know, we know these names, Paul Revere and John Hancock and all these other guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so it does just a really good job of keeping you engaged that way. And then, like I said, the little clues act almost as like mini cliffhangers throughout mm-hmm. the movie. Like, it's almost like end of like chapters in a book. So you right. kind of want to see what happens next. And then you have the idea of like, This heist that happens in the middle of it where they have to steal the Declaration of Independence. So you got this kind of like page turner like puzzle mystery thing. Then you throw in a whole heist element. And then you have the chase of the bad guys chasing them. There's a lot going on in the movie that keeps you engaged the entire time. There's a lot yeah. in the movie that keeps it propulsive and energetic. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's surprisingly light. And it's a real like easygoing movie, even though it's like it's fast paced. Yeah. It doesn't feel like there's not a lot of violence in it.
Mm-mm.
There's very little like no. like gunplay or anything like that. It's really an adventure film first and foremost, and not necessarily an action film.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that there might not even have been, but just like a few gunshots, if at all, like maybe during a gun chase or something like that. But I mean, or if you saw a gun, it was like flash to like, you know, we're gonna kidnap you or something like that. Yeah. Like, yeah,
There's one interesting thing about it. In both films, Nicolas Cage throws, this is combined in both films, okay. he throws one punch.
Oh, wow.
In two films combined, and the one punch he throws, it hurts his hand.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's almost like an anti-action movie kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Well, the first one, they're being chased by, because they stole, like, the Constitution, or not the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. They're being chased by the feds, and then they're also being chased by this, you know, entrepreneur, you know, Ian Howe, who, like, really wants to get a hold of this treasure. So Ian is always, like, you know, sort of, like, one step behind them the whole time until he realizes, like, no, I've got to get the thing. Like, I've got to... And they finally catch up to him, like, in Philadelphia, where they're, like, the Philadelphia at the Liberty Bell. Because, yeah, because, like, that's what happens. It's like, oh, we got to go to the Liberty Bell, and there's something there. There's, like, a symbol, and then, like, they take out this brick, and, like, oh, there's, you know, something there, and, like, another clue.
These cool
and then,
Ben Franklin glasses that are perfectly preserved for 100 years.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, just sitting right here the whole time, and then just look at it, and then, you know. So we can interpret this other clue that's on the back of the Declaration of Independence. Yeah. And,
like I said, it's all just a bit silly, but it's handled so sincerely and so rapidly that you're just like, sure, there's a hologram on the back of the Declaration of Independence.
Well,
why
not? And the action, I mean, even though that they're both movies are like 2 hours long, it happens so fast. Like, and they're all being chased. It's almost like you don't even question it. You're just like, oh, wow, that's cool. And then they, like, you know, they solve the clue and move on.
Yeah. It's basically the cinematic equivalent of a page turner. Like, you just, like, it keeps giving you little things to hook your attention and keeps you moving on to the next scene. It's really quite brilliant. And they're both that way in their structure, the way it kind of just kind of pushes you along from point to point.
Right. Well, let's talk about National Treasure Book of Secrets. So, Book of Secrets, I mean, National Treasure came out in 2004.
Yes.
So, this was 3 years later. They came out with 2007. And that wasn't unheard of back then. I mean, even Pirates of the Caribbean was already announced that it was going to have, like, multiples. And I think the first one came out in 2003. The next one didn't come out until 2006.
Yeah, this is when they started really planning the idea of multiple movies and then making them happen. So 3 years is a pretty quick turnaround for this kind of stuff.
Right. I mean,
anything quicker than that, and then there's would mean no breaks at all between filming.
Right. Yeah, because you have to get everything in order first. So it's almost like a year of planning, a year of shooting and editing, and then, like, then there's got to be promotion behind it all before the movie's released.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're talking about, it's like, that's a 3 years is a tight schedule for a sequel. It really is.
Right.
Well, one thing I like about, one thing I like about National Treasure 2 Book of Secrets is it kind of has a little bit of a Ghostbusters 2 vibe in that you join the characters in the beginning and they're not quite as successful as they were at the end of the first film.
Yeah.
You know,
they
kind of stumbled a little bit.
Yeah, you learn that Gates and Abigail are going through some separation, and Riley has lost his money to a bad tax attorney, got him in trouble, so he's had his Ferrari repossessed by the IRS.
Yeah.
Everything kind of starts off on kind of a sour note, and then they introduced another character. The bad guy this time is played by Ed Harris, plays Mitch Wilkinson, and then he has this piece of evidence that, like, he's trying to, lift up the Wilkinson, family name and try to blame, the shooting of Lincoln on the Gates family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's basically trying to set it as if the Gates family was responsible for the Lincoln assassination.
And right.
I got to stop for a moment and say, how great is it that the villains of these two movies are guys like Sean Bean and Ed Harris?
Yeah.
I love about Bruckheimer Films is they always have the most loaded casts. You know, actors.
You cut out there. What was that again?
I said, that's one thing I love about Bruckheimer Films. They have the most loaded cast lists,
Oh,
They spare no expense on getting top-notch actors for these parts,
Yeah, well, I mean, this wasn't the first time that Ed Harris and Nick Cage faced off. They were also in The Rock.
Very true.
Which starred Sean Connery, I mean, that just shows you what kind of Nicolas Cage, Sean Connery, Ed Harris. And then also, speaking of, to your point again, we have Dame Helen Mirren.
That's Nicolas Cage's mom, yeah.
Yeah, Nick Cage's mom. I mean, and still got Harvey Keitel, coming back as his character.
Yeah, it's the rare sequel that brings back everyone that it possibly can,
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Because, I mean, who would want to bring back the old villain? So, and this was a more kind of like Civil War tale about like gold. And then, but you really don't learn like what Book of Secrets is until like midway through the movie. As like one of the clues that they need. It's almost one of the last clues that they need, almost.
Yeah, it's basically this idea that basically all of the big secrets of America are encased in this one book called The President's Book of Secrets. Again, completely ludicrous.
Yeah.
But it's just it's kind of a fun idea. Like it's got the truth about Area 51.
Yeah.
You know, the Kennedy assassination. All this stuff is just encased in this one like journal, and it's got the key to finding this lost city of gold. You know?
Right. Well, and how they needed this this message like decoded, and they didn't have, you know, the information, and so then they got like part of it, and then they, you know, they go to was it France? They go to Paris to like look at the other like Statue of Liberty made by the same builder, and you know, get close to it with this you know, remote controlled helicopter.
Yeah, for movies that are really about American history, these are really globe-trotting movies. They take place all over the world.
Yeah,
and that's part of the fun of them in a way. It's kind of like an educational James Bond almost.
Yeah, I mean, I really like that because even though that it was dealing with you know, something that happened around the Civil War, they still, you know, incorporated you know, like Paris and, you know, England. They had to go to Buckingham Palace. And so it was just kind of like, I mean, and really, if you think about it, you just have to, if you think about for a second, even dwell on it for a moment and go, he's going to break into Buckingham Palace to this desk or get into the Oval Office to the Resolute desk with nobody looking. I mean,
yeah, it's all ludicrous. Yeah,
it's all super, like, really, like, or he's going to corner the president and have him in like a, you know, in a room by himself with nobody else around.
Yeah, he's going to convince the president to go off on an adventure with him, a lot like he's Tom Sawyer. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and but that's the thing, man. The movies are so well made and they move so well that you don't stop to think about how silly it is until days later. You know?
Yeah.
And they're just such good, like, fun popcorn films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. Almost, I mean, almost kind of like, you know, candy in a way. But, yeah, they're just good adventure stories. I mean, I think that if you, I mean, if you're a fan of Indiana Jones, you have to like National Treasure because I think it's just, you know, it's a lot of the same thing. I really loved in this movie, though, they showed a lot more of the technology of the day. They still show the technology of 2004, you know, like with the web search and stuff like that. But, you know, this had like phone cloning. And,
yeah.
You know.
There were a lot of razor phones in yes. Book of Secrets. Yes.
Yeah, so many everybody razors. Everybody was having razor phones in 2007. Yeah. This is like pre-smartphones and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So. But you could still take pictures with your phone and send it, you know, text message to somebody or like whatever.
Yeah. It's a fun little time capsule of technology for sure.
Yeah. And then a random Randy Travis cameo.
Yeah. So just weird.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah. Like, and they have play like two of his songs. Like, why is he in this movie?
Yeah. Not just one song either. It's two songs.
Yeah,
like Jerry Bruckheimer must have been a fan of Randy Travis or something.
That's all I can think. Or maybe the director was.
Maybe the director.
But yeah, he's just playing at this president's party, and like, okay, that seems like an odd choice.
I'm Randy Travis.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just kind of one of those things, though, that could be, you know, very sort of plausible, I guess. You know, presidents do actually have, you know. You know, very well-known artists play for, you know, their birthday celebrations, you know what I mean? So,
yeah,
that is not uncommon at all.
It just seems like a really random choice to me to have it be Randy Travis. But to go back to the more the point of the film, one thing that I really like about the entire franchise, and especially the second one, is that it's, like, it's all about, in a lot of ways, it's about family and about them caring for each other. And like I said, it's, even though it's an adventure film, It's not overly violent. They're trying. If there's any action, it's them trying to get away or save each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's refreshing because, you know, I watch a lot of movies. I watch a lot of action movies, and it's refreshing to see something where, like, kicking someone's butt or you know, shooting someone's not the main focus of a film. I like that it's got kind of a gentler quality to it.
Well, and even the bad guy, he's not really after the treasure. He's after trying to sort of clear his family's name or whatever.
Yeah, like, he doesn't want to be associated with the Lincoln assassination, so he wants to, you know, shift it away from that. And and that's you know, it's nuanced, and it's it makes him more than just a cookie-cutter villain.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think elevates it a little bit above the first one in that respect. Because, like I said, in the first one, Sean Bean was just, he's a rich guy who wants to be richer. This one had a little bit more of a noble cause, which I think made it a little more engaging as far as what happens to him and how it all plays out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I appreciated that. I probably appreciated that progression.
Yeah, and they weren't chased by the government as much. I mean, they had a little bit of chase because he, you know, cornered the president or whatever. But there was no, you know, they went up to like Mount Rushmore and there was not a federal agent in sight. You know what I mean?
Nope.
It was just, you know, it was just, you know, Ed Harris. And I say Ed Harris, but his character name and his, like, you know, cohort buddies or whatever. So yeah, there was no sort of, you know, sort of treasure, and there's no sort of like Indiana Jones idea of like somebody trying to get the treasure for themselves or whether they're trying to put it in a museum. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Everyone's really trying to put this stuff in a museum. Everyone has like altruistic goals, which is, I like that about the second one. It's just different.
It did. But I mean, it's just like you just want to find the treasure with them and get past all of the weird stuff. I just thought it was weird that they had to, since there wasn't that element of like, this person is going to kill you. Now that we found the treasure, now we got to get rid of you. They had to ramp up like the ending, and like water just came out of nowhere, you know. And then
it became like the overly complicated death trap thing. Like, why would these ancient people build this stuff that would obviously kill them very, very easily?
Yeah, it became kind of like an escape room, you know, kind of thing. You know what I mean?
It was very video game like.
Yeah, it was. And I think that the ending was sort of ended. My notes kind of had something about Mr. Gate, the father, John Voight, like getting shot, but they cut that out. They did make it a more like friendlier ending,
which again I appreciate that, because him getting shot, that's almost too obvious, you know.
Yeah, I just thought it was weird though that he was like, okay, you're gonna hold the door, no, I'll hold the door, and then like somehow they got swept up and then he got left behind anyway.
Yeah, but at that point the movie had like 10 minutes left, so I was like, it's fine.
Yeah. It was kind of like, let's wrap it up. Yeah. How they going to get out? How they going to, you know. Anyway, it was a fun movie. I mean, I really enjoyed
it. It's not as good as the first one. It's not as good as the first one, but it's still good. No. It's just not nearly as good as the first one.
No. And you know, I think, not as good. Still fun. Still has all of those elements of surprise sort of camaraderie and the friendliness, and then you introduce more family, the dad and the mom, and you know their quarrels, and then you know Gates and Abigail and their sort of quarrels, and so it made a lot of more fun lines.
Yeah, I mean it's a little more contrived than the first one for sure, but But it's got good qualities. One thing I like about it, to go back to what we were talking about earlier, was the second one allows Nicolas Cage to have a few more like big moments. Like he gets to do like his Nick Cage thing.
Oh, like when they had they staged the argument in Buckingham Palace.
Yeah, and he gets to do his quiet, loud bit, which he doesn't do in the first movie at all. He plays it very down the middle in the first movie. In the second film, he gets to be a little more weird. And I appreciate that about it. Because even though I do think he's a good actor, and I unironically love his work, I do enjoy watching him go like out there. I like watching him be weird.
Well, and this is... You have to remember that these are blockbuster movies. You know, these are movies...
Yeah.
He does these kind of movies so he can do the other artful, like Picasso movies, like you say. You know what I mean? This is what pays the bills for the rest of the year, so he can do three other, you know, like really odd, weird movies that are, you know, that really challenge him as an actor. You know what I mean? And but I think still shows, you know, his range and shows how... you know, believable that he can be in almost anything that he is, you know, any role that he's in, you know, he really takes, you know, seriousness and you never, you know, question his character, you know, you never question his motivations.
Yeah. But he's, because when you look at him, you wouldn't think he has much range, but when you start going through his filmography, he has so much range. So, and I think you get to see a little more of him having fun in the second one, which I appreciate as someone who's, again, a Nick Cage connoisseur. But overall, the first movie's better. But the second one gets a little broader, which I kind of like.
Yeah, it's still the same. It's still the same type of movie, just like different elements, I think.
Yes.
It's not like Indiana Jones where you're getting a whole new set of circumstances. You know, it's more just like... Not that it's like cookie cutter, but it's definitely, you know, a lot of the same elements.
It's a little more convoluted,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a little needlessly bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's still good. It's just it's more. You know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, true. But I and I don't think the clues were as easy to follow as the other one.
No, they weren't. Like you could really tell that they were struggling sometimes. Like you tell that they had been thinking about the first one for a long time, and the second one they were like, "Oh, we got to come up with a whole bunch of new clues now."
Yeah, it's almost like they came up with places that they can shoot. We know we can shoot here. We know we can shoot here. So let's incorporate Mount Rushmore. Let's incorporate, you know, this place in France and the Buckingham Palace. Like, we'll tie this all together and the Resolute Desk and you know, Universal already has like the Oval Office. You know that almost any. You know, movie uses like the same Oval Office and everything. So, I mean, it's just like we already have all these places. Let's use them. And they still shot, you know, a lot on set. I mean, even Mount Vernon was shot at Mount Vernon. But let us get on to the notes, shall we?
Let's talk some trivia.
And National Treasure, the movie suggests that something is written on the back of the Declaration of Independence. It is true that something is written on its back. The writing on the back of the Declaration of Independence reads, "Original Declaration of Independence, dated 4th July, 1776. That's it. And it appears on the bottom of the document upside down. While no one knows for certain who wrote it, it is that early in its life, a large parchment document was rolled up for storage, so it's likely that the notation was added simply as a label. National Treasure was also filmed primarily in Washington, New York, Philadelphia, and Utah. Most of the scenes were filmed on location, with exceptions of the Independence Hall scene, which was filmed at the replica of Independence Hall at Knott's Berry Farm, and the Arctic scene, which was filmed in Utah. So the opening scene with the, or one of the opening scenes right after the credits with the Charlotte. Ship.
Huh. That was Utah, huh?
Yeah, it was Utah. And then probably the ship was probably somewhere on a set somewhere, I'd imagine. But yeah, the outside with the with those things that were crawling on the, you know, that was probably somewhere in Utah. On the DVD, director John Turteltaub, I'm so bad at names.
It's okay,
says,
man.
The initial rough cut was around 4 hours long.
That's too much, yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if they had more
of the villains trying to figure out this stuff, too. You know what I mean?
I guess you'd have to, right? I mean, that's a lot of extra time.
Yeah, I wonder what was really, like, cut out. I really want to know. Maybe more longer chase scenes. I don't know. It has been noted by viewers that the good guys in the movie use Google search and the bad guys use Yahoo search. So
that's a bit of a psyop there, isn't it?
Diane Kruger did also most of her own stunt work in the car chase scene. And that car chase scene was, you know, a lot like the truck car chase scene that we saw in Beverly Hills Cop, that we also kind of saw in Interspace, where there's, you know, the back of the door flies open and somebody's hanging on to it.
It's a classic gag. It really is.
Yeah. Roger Ebert gave National Treasure, you want to guess?
I'm going to guess 3.
2. 2 stars out of 4.
Again, I disagree with him sometimes.
He called it so silly that the Monty Python version could use the same screenplay line for line.
That's probably fair.
Yeah. Rotten Tomatoes critic score is 44%.
I think it's much better than that. You know,
well, the audience agrees with you, and definitely I would say we're more audience than critics. An audience 76%.
That feels right to me.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what it's flip-flopped. And I think that's where I think the dichotomy is of, like, these movies. It's just like this is more kind of like the sweet stuff, and critics don't like the sweet stuff. You know what I mean? They don't like the M&Ms. And it's just like, you know, sometimes you just got to enjoy the M&Ms. You know what I mean?
And I think critics often lambast Cage for not being serious actor all the time. Mm-hmm. For not being that Leaving Las Vegas Nicolas Cage all the time, you know?
Yeah.
I think they kind of resent him for doing, you know, family films and, like, action pictures.
Yeah.
When they know he can do, like, Moonstruck.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Budget, like I said, was $100 million. Box office, $347.5 million.
It was a big hit.
I mean, that's 3.5 times what the investment that Disney put into it. I mean, just like you put $100 million in, you get $350 million back almost. I mean, and created a franchise, you know, at that point. You know what I mean? So therefore, in 2007, National Treasure: Book of Secrets. I have a little more notes on this movie than I do of National Treasure, and that's because there's just more to it. There was a little more history and stuff like that was there, and so I'll go through some of it.
Okay.
We'll have a little bit of a history lesson. After the Resolute, so there was actually a ship that is true, the HMS Resolute. All right, and you remember what HMS stands for after, like, our Master and Commander episode?
I think so, but go ahead and refresh
your memory. Her Majesty's Service, right? Yes. So after the HMS Resolute was broken up, Queen Victoria did have 4 desks to be built from her timbers. One did go to Rutherford B. Hayes that we all know now is the Resolute desk that sits in the Oval Office. But there is no matching Resolute desk, okay? However, the 3 other desks that were made, there was a smaller ladies' desk that was presented to the window of Henry Grinnell. And Henry Grinnell was an American merchant at the time. So he bought, like, you know, bought and sold a lot of, like, British goods and stuff like that. So that's why it was given to him. 2 smaller desks were made for Queen Victoria herself, but they were writing tables, and so they were and they were a whole lot smaller than what we know is, like, the Resolute desk, and I don't think quite as ornate. But there are exact replicas of the Oval Office Resolute desk in at least 6 presidential libraries, and that includes Rutherford B. Hayes, Robert F. Kennedy, Richard Nixon, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, and Bill Clinton.
Interesting.
So when they say in the movie that, you know, when Ty Burrell, you know, from Modern Family, says, like, all the presidents have used it since Rutherford B. Hayes, and she says, no, not, who'd she say, but except for...
I don't remember, to be honest with you.
It was whoever,
I remember the line, but not the president.
Yeah. It was whoever came after Kennedy.
Johnson?
Yes, except for Johnson and except for Gerald Ford. Those two, and I don't know if it was just because that they were vice presidents who then became president and didn't feel like that they wanted to use the Resolute Disc, that they felt that it was like you had to be elected to use it, but they both opted not to use the Resolute Disc. But Jimmy Carter brought it back, and it's been there ever since. Many scenes of historic locations were filmed on location, including the scenes at Mount Vernon and Mount Rushmore. Disney discovered that the shooting schedule at Mount Rushmore would displace the local high school prom held annually at the location. So to make up for this, Disney did something nice. They paid for the prom by providing transportation to a new location in Rapid City. They had door prizes at the prom, and that included, and then also had scholarships for the valedictorians.
Well, that's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Patrick Gates, who's played by John Voight, lives in the same house used in the movie Father of the Bride and also Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Hmm. I thought that house looked familiar.
Yeah, it's one of those like Hollywood, like nice looking, you know, kind of like older, sits on the corner like this, you know, sidewalk. And anyway, see, the area of the Library of Congress in which Benjamin Gates finds the Book of Secrets does not exist as an area of bookshelves. The bookshelves were constructed as a prop and then, like, taken down after the scenes were shot. So, although Google Maps shows it would... So, in the movie, they say, like, he's at Mount Vernon, and then he calls Abigail and he says, meet me at the Library of Congress in 20 minutes. So, I looked it up. Google Maps shows it would take around 30 minutes to drive from Mount Vernon to the Library of Congress via George Washington Memorial Parkway.
Maybe she drove really fast.
Or maybe he was further away, or maybe they drove. That's the only thing I can think of. Maybe they were just really stupid, like driving faster than they should have been. The lake depicted to be immediately behind Mount Rushmore in the movie is Sylvan Lake, but it is actually located about 20 miles southwest of the monument.
Yeah, I didn't think there was that big of a body of water that close to Mount Rushmore. That struck me as odd, but I couldn't remember if that was the case. So I'm glad to know that I wasn't misremembering that.
Yeah. There is an actual, like, chamber that was designed to, like, keep the, you know, important documents and stuff like that that was, like, carved in the mountain. And I think that's where a lot of people get the idea of, like, a treasure being hidden there as well. I think that's part of it. It's in actually in the back of, like, back behind Lincoln's head. So, experts were brought in to match the handwriting of Abraham Lincoln, Queen Victoria, and Calvin Coolidge. So where you see, like, in the Book of Secrets, where you see, like, Calvin Coolidge, like, in his handwriting, like, they actually, that's the kind of like the links that they went to. It's like, oh, we got to have somebody that like that writes so it looks like his handwriting.
That's neat. That's neat, but it seems unnecessary.
Yeah, it seems kind of unnecessary.
Yeah.
The script originally called for Mitch Wilkinson, which is Ed Harris, to stab Patrick Gates. Not shot, stab. That's right, because he had a knife at that point. In the scene where they escape from the flooding Gold City. It was taken out in post-production because it made the character cross a line that producer and director John Turteltaub felt ought not to be crossed. This is why there's almost no shots of Patrick Gates remaining in the scene. He was bleeding, and that's really hard to hide. And then the sweater in the next scene had been ripped, but they were able to like virtually stitch it back together with CG.
Huh. Movie magic.
Yeah, I almost went back and like watched the scene after reading that. I was like, I still need to go back and like look at that. I will note that both movies are now available on Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
So, like when we first, what's funny is that when we first started, National Treasure was on Netflix, and National Treasure 2 was on Disney Plus, but now they're both on Disney Plus.
Streaming media.
Yes. Disney Press has also published a series of spin-off historical novels between 2007 and 2009 about ancestors of the Gates family, all written by the same author, Catherine Hapke. So, National Treasure Book of Secrets grossed $44.8 million in its opening week, placing it number one in the box office. It remained at the box office for two more weeks, grossing $35.7 million, blah, blah, blah. The budget was $130 million, and then finally made $457.4 million. So it made more money than, it made, you know, $100 million more than the first one.
Yeah. Yeah, and they haven't got around to part three yet. I'm surprised.
Yeah, well, there's been talks, but we'll get to there in a second. Roger Ebert, what do you think he gave it? It's like, okay, the first one, I gave it 2 stars, but it did really well. Second one came out, it's almost the same movie. What do you think he gave it?
I'm going to say 2 stars again.
2 stars, you're absolutely correct. Yay, give him his prize.
Yeah.
Whoa, and my mic fell. Oh, my mic and my mic stand. SM7 is a heavy mic. Sorry. All right.
Bear with us.
Yeah. National Treasure Book of Secrets. Okay. This is a quote from Roger Ebert. National Treasure Book of Secrets has without a doubt the most absurd and fevered plot since, oh, say, National Treasure from 2004.
Yeah. He was a very funny man, Roger Ebert.
That is how he opened his whole article. And then later on, he says, yes, once again, they are all trapped within the earth, dangling over a terrifying drop, and their search once again involves a secret document and a hidden treasure. So there you go. Rotten Tomatoes critics, 36% this time. Not, what was the other one, 44?
Mm-hmm.
Audience, 67%.
Like I said, it's not as good as the first one. It's really not. Objectively, it's not as good.
Just to recap, the original is 44 and 76, respectively. Okay, so yeah. The film National Secrets, Book of Secrets, did earn 2 Razzie Award nominations, including Worst Actor for Nicolas Cage and Worst Supporting Actor for John Voight.
That's some BS.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. The Razzies. Well, the film was nominated for Best Movie at the 2008 MTV Movie Awards.
There you go. The real indicator of quality.
Yeah. It's been vindicated, but it lost to Transformers. But also losing to Transformers was Superbad, Juno, Pirates of the Caribbean, At World's End, and I Am Legend.
That's a pretty good year for movies. Those are some fun titles in there.
And 2008, John Turteltaub said that the filmmaking team would take his time on another National Treasure Secret, or sequel, National Treasure Secret. In October 2013, he said that the studio himself, Jerry Bruckheimer, all want to do the third film. In 2016, Nicolas Cage confirmed that the film was still in writing process. 2018, the director, John Turteltaub, reiterated a script for a possible third film was close. And then, in January of 2020, it was announced that Chris Brimmer, the writer of Bad Boys for Life, would write a new script for it. So, apparently, I guess they had a script and Disney just wouldn't sign off on it. But now, just released this week... Now, this never happens to us, where we have, like, breaking news, and it's going to be old news by the time this podcast comes out.
So but it was podcasting.
Yeah, it was just announced a few weeks ago, but just a few weeks ago to our listeners, but just, like, last week to us. In May of 2020, Jerry Bruckheimer revealed that a television series based on the franchise was in the works at Disney Plus, and that a plot script and outlines for additional episodes were complete. The series would follow the same concept of the films with a younger cast.
And see, here's where I'm gonna have to say, I don't think it works without Nicolas Cage. I really don't think it does. It's not unique enough by itself to work.
It almost sounds like it's like a young Indiana Jones or something.
Yeah.
if they're going to do a younger cast. Like, it's not going to be the same cast, and it's going to be... I wonder what they're going to do with it.
I don't know who you'd cast as, like, a young Nicolas Cage. I really don't.
And is it going to be modern, or is it going to be, like, historical searches for some of these things, or...
Who knows, man, you know? But I guess we'll find out soon enough, because, you know, those streaming content giants have to be fed with new stuff. So people will pay their subscription fees.
And I'm sure that it's going to have a bunch of historical half-truths, or at least enough truth for it to be, you know, plausible to audiences.
And
you know.
So many cliffhangers.
So many. Oh, of course. I mean, if anybody watched The Mandalorian, you know about cliffhangers.
Well, I'm not going to get into my opinions of The Mandalorian. I'm not a fan. I'm going to get hate mail for that, but I didn't care for it. But that's just me.
I really liked it, but yeah, there's a lot of cliffhangers. I mean, Stranger Things had a lot of cliffhangers, but the way Disney Plus does it is that it's just like TV, you have to wait a whole other week, you know, to get that sort of fix, as opposed to just like Netflix and some of the others, just like, you know, giving you a whole series at once. Yeah. I will say, back to your Nicolas Cage discussion, if you've not seen the Jimmy Fallon impression of, you know, doing the Tiger King, because it was also announced this past week that Nicolas Cage would be playing or portraying the Tiger King. It's really fantastic.
Yeah, well, no, I guess because Nick is really easy to parody for sure, because he's just got such a unique presence. And it's really easy to do a Nicolas Cage impression. It's kind of like doing like a Christopher Walken impression. Everyone's got a little bit of a Nicolas Cage impression.
I don't have a really good one.
Well, I didn't say people have good ones, but everyone's got a little bit of a Nicolas Cage they can do.
I got, you know, Walken is so easy to do when you just do it and you keep doing it. You know, Nick Cage, he does movies. Anyway.
But yeah,
Nick Cage,
it's just quiet, quiet, loud, quiet, quiet, loud.
Yeah. You know, it's just a lot of freaking out and then back to normal and then,
With just a little bit of like a pseudo southern accent in there,
yeah. I don't know where his accent is sort of funny. It's almost like a southern Keanu Reeves or something.
Yeah, like a Kentucky Fried Keanu Reeves in a way. Yeah,
Kentucky Fried Keanu.
but you know, Nick, we love you, man. If you hear this show, you know, hit us up. You know, we'd love to have you on the show. We're pro Nick Cage.
Yeah, I mean, definitely for sure. And even the, you know, like this, like the blockbuster film. So we always have to go to the question, you know, if you got this from the video store, would you keep it an extra day, or would you pay for the late fee, or keep it an extra day with the late fees, or would you return on time?
I would buy them. I have them in my collection. I'm a proud Nicolas Cage fan. I'm super pro Nick Cage.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen these movies a couple times. I mean, they're fun movies to watch. Like, I remember watching them on, you know, TNT or USA or, you know, one of those television back when, around that time period. And they're fun to watch. They keep you just like, you can just sit on the couch like on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon and you're just like sucked in. And you're like, I've been sitting here for an hour. Like, what am I doing? Yeah. And it's because you're watching this movie, you're like sucked into what's going to happen next. And I realized by watching these movies that I actually kind of confused the first one and the second one, because I thought like the Liberty Bell would take them to Mount Rushmore, and I realized it's like, no, that's not how it is at all.
A cavalcade of American landmarks. Yeah,
exactly. But that just shows you how like sort of similar they are. Like, it's easy to confuse the two together. Like, if you don't know, if you just turn it on and you're in the middle of it, like, wait, which one are we watching?
Yeah, they're almost modular in that way. Like, you could almost take pieces out of them and like swap them around, and they'd still kind of make sense.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah. But still, very enjoyable.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's as we start to wrap up the show, it's time to talk about recommendations. And yes. To start off with, I'm going to recommend a movie you mentioned earlier.
Okay.
It is the third collaboration between John Turteltaub and Nicolas Cage.
Uh-huh.
The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yeah, which, believe it or not, is an adaptation of the short from Fantasia with Mickey and the Brooms.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It takes that idea and greatly expands upon it. It basically stars Jay Baruchel, who was in Knocked Up and a uh-huh. bunch of those other like Seth Rogen movies, uh-huh. as an apprentice to an ancient sorcerer played by Nicolas Cage. And it was sort of Disney's attempt to make like a Harry Potter, like urban fantasy kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like it involves like monsters and like magic battles in like the streets. It's honestly a very cool movie. Mm-hmm. It's going to be added to Disney Plus in October.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys haven't seen it, I highly recommend checking it out. I'm really looking forward to it popping back up because I've not seen it since it was out in theaters. Mm-hmm. But I have really fond memories of it. And I think Turteltaub and Cage do good work together.
Yep. I'll go with that. The movie that I was going to suggest is a non-Nick Cage movie. For all the Nick Cage love, and that's the Da Vinci Code, because I think it just kind of goes it kind of goes along with these secrets, these hidden clues, these other people that are trying to get after him, and really the treasure in the Da Vinci Code is more like, you know, the chalice, like the same thing that like, you know, Arthur was, you know, was sort of after, right? Like and this the same sort of treasure of in the third Indiana Jones movie, mm-hmm. but it's more like, you know, I guess sort of modern in how it would actually like go about, like you would look for it, and but then turns out to be something different. But I won't go into it. But it's a really sort of riveting book and also a riveting movie. It's another one of those like, you know, popcorn. Sort of like, you know, watch it, you know, sort of. And if you're reading the book, it's also like just a page turner, because like one thing kind of leads into the next.
And it stars the great Tom Hanks, who love here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's fantastic in everything that he's in. I mean, I've yet to find a bad performance of a Tom Hanks performance. I've yet to find one.
It's like, you know, the movie may not be good around him, but he is good in it.
Yeah.
Much like Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, like Bachelor Party wasn't that great of a movie, but he was a lovable character. Like Bosom Buddies wasn't that great of a TV show, but he was entertaining, you know? So, anyway, I could go on. This is about National Treasure.
Could you imagine Nicolas Cage in Bosom Buddies?
That would be
with
weird.
Like the wig and like you know, the woman's clothes. I think that's. I wish we lived in the alternate reality where that was a thing,
right? what if Nick Cage and Tom Hanks did like the Odd Couple?
Yeah, that'd be great.
where Tom would be the more straight guy, Nick would be, you know, the more. Kind of like lazy one, yeah.
Slovenly kind of, yeah. Walter Matthau character.
Yes.
To live in the alternate realities. the multiverse. and on that truly idiotic note, I want to thank you guys for checking in with us this week. We'll see you again in 2 weeks. I'm Matthew Estrie,
and I'm Ryan Acri.
Go watch some movies, guys.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Video Culture. You can check us out on Twitter at VideoCulture2.
That's the number 2 for two guys talking about movies like Ryan and myself.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for Video Culture Podcast.
Also, be sure to stop by our official website, video-culture.com. There we have the entire show archives, as well as articles about film.
Yeah, so check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, coming out with us, talk movies. Did you like the show? Do you hate the show? Do you like or hate the movies we talked about? Let us know. Come chat with us, and let's all watch movies together.